Hello and welcome to another episode of Nothing Ventured with me, Arish Shah. Today in the studio with me, I had Mike Bank. Mike is the founder of Underdog, a pre-accelerating syndicate designed to support solo and non-traditional founders in launching revenue-generating businesses without needing to quit their day jobs. His career spans investment banking at Citi, early stage VC at Number One Seed, multiple ventures as a 2x VC-backed founder, and a prolific angel investor with around 100 early stage bets under his belt. Through roles at Antler, OneDay.io, and now Underdog, Mike has worked hands-on with hundreds of founders, helping them de-risk ideas, accelerate launch, and rethink what venture success can look like. In today's episode, we talked about whether 100 bets is a lot as an angel investor, negotiating a management buy-in at a service station on the way to Wales, how it's never been simpler to start a business, but that doesn't mean it's easy, and why you should think about your business through the lens of desirability, feasibility, and affordability.
Does anyone want what you've got to offer?
Whether venture capital is going back to its roots, and how Mike is accelerating a 13-year-old selling mystery seeds in a box at Underdog.
The youngest person that we've had on Underdog was 13 years old.
And why there is no special space for any of us, so let's remove those mental barriers when we think about diversity.
There's no special place for you. You're going to have to work fucking hard.
How mentoring over 100 day zero founders over a year led to launching Underdog.
I got invited to mentor on this, venture program, I suppose, but working with very early, as in like day zero founders, people who wanted to start something, but in many cases didn't know what they wanted to start.
And Mike's contrarian opinion, it's okay to fail even if it's not well accepted here in the UK, but success should also be celebrated. And inequality of life will always exist, and that's okay.
I think it is both okay to fail.
Let's get straight into it. Hey guys, whilst I've got you here for a second, I thought I'd reintroduce myself. My name's Arish. I'm the host of Nothing Ventured, the podcast where I talk to the people behind the stories that make the venture ecosystem go round. I'm also the founder of Emerge One, a consultancy providing fractional CFO support to venture-backed tech startups from seed to Series B and beyond. If you like the podcast, we'd love it if you could rate and subscribe on YouTube, Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you want to tell me anything about what you've heard today or recommend any guests that you'd like for us to have on, reach out to me on LinkedIn or Twitter. I'd love to hear from you. Right, let's get back into it. Welcome back. Mike and I had so much to talk about, we decided to split this into two episodes. So if you haven't caught episode one, do go back and check it out. You can find it on YouTube, Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Right, let's get into it. Capital, I mean, like I've always thought about it from the perspective that capital is a lubricant, it is not the goal, right? Like it is the means, not the end. And I think the problem is that we went through this phase where for a lot of founders, I mean, this is going to sound negative, but I think it's fair to say for a lot of people, the goal was raising venture, not building a business. Whereas actually, yeah, the reason you raise any investment is to try and deliver a good or service that other people are going to buy, right? Like you don't, I mean, like, yes, of course there was, you know, there was these multiple rounds where you're just, you know, scaling valuations, all the rest of it. But ultimately, if you don't build a business which supplies a good or service that people want to buy and that you can sell for or sell profitably, like you haven't built a business, you haven't created any value, you've just got paper numbers, right? Like essentially you're not really, you haven't used the capital in the way that it was intended. But that was also, you know, that part of the problem was that we had this surfeit of capital because of money, you know, money machine go brr. You know, we had zero interest rates, lots of cash being printed, lots of money being printed, and lots of that cash being deployed because you had nowhere else to park it. So it is unsurprising, and I think this has been debated to death already, and we're like 4 years on from it, but it's very clear that during the kind of 19-20-21 period, that was a very much an aberration as a result of cheap money, right? But today, like, the reality is that I think, you know, you said it earlier, it's never been simpler to set up a business. It may not be easy. And I love that as a phrase. But we're actually in this moment where anyone can build, right? But the question is, should they? And, you know, how should they think about that? Because, you know, the proliferation we've got of AI, no code, tools like Lovable, which, you know, again, we chat about all the time on some of these chats we're on, has allowed people to kind of democratize innovation. But I also wonder whether it's going to drown us in kind of garbage tech. So, like, I'd love to also understand, you know, from your perspective, from a kind of underdog perspective, maybe more broadly, like the potential profile of the sort of founder that this kind of tech might attract. Do you think it favors like the 25-year-old hacker type, or the like me, the 45-year-old, you know, been there, done that, have domain knowledge about whatever it is, and actually this allows me to now leverage my knowledge to build something of value?
Yeah, in short, we're deliberately blind to a lot of that stuff.
Interesting.
So the youngest person that we've had on Underdog was 13 years old, is in 1-3.
Wow.
With his parents' permission. That was a whole story in itself. When his mum called me up and said, who I had met, right? I'd met them. But she called me up and she said, yeah, what's your safeguarding policy? And I said, oh my gosh, you what? Like, well, we don't have one. If you want to remove him, I understand. And she said, no, look, we'll just monitor it ourselves.
What was he building? I've got to ask.
So for a kid, it was a pretty cool idea. And probably it wasn't what I was building. I was building websites at that age and selling them to companies. But yeah, he is building a seed box, like a mystery seed box that you
Interesting.
Plant.
Interesting, yeah.
And again, I said to him, look, market it as for kids by kids.
Yeah.
Really cool.
Yeah. And learn where your food comes from. Not a bad idea.
There's an education piece attached to it. Yeah, it's got the whole, there's a QR code, you scan it. So you don't know what the kind of mystery bit is. You don't know what seeds you're getting.
You don't know what's, that's pretty cool, actually.
It is cool. And I liked it. As soon as he told me about that, I was like, man, that's awesome. How far have you got? And he went, oh, I've got all these mock-ups and designs. And I said, have you sold it?
Yeah.
He was like, no, I can't do that. And I was like, no, mate, you can.
You can.
And that's the whole point. This kid...
Get a takeaway box, bung some soil in, put a seed in.
He's mocked them up. He's taken them to his local garden center. He arranged a meeting with his dad, right? But, you know, because he's a kid. But if he was even 18, he would have been able to do that off his own back. Yeah, the second youngest was 18. He was not even at uni. He was finishing his A-levels. And similar thing, right? He was a real hustler. So again, we remove those artificial barriers. And I said to him, there's nothing stopping you from selling this. Do not use age as something that will work against you. Use it as something that will work for you. Because trust me, people like me, we want to help people like you. You're a kid. We want to pay it forwards. We've been lucky. A lot of, I think, our successes, certainly my successes, have been down to luck. A bit of preparation as well, right? But we want to pay it forward. So use that to your advantage whilst you still have it. Because in the blink of an eye, you'll be in your 40s like me, my friend. And he was laughing. He'll be, I'll never be as old as you. But, you know, of course he will be. But He and this business is not going to make him millions, but will he learn a lot? Hell yes.
I don't think there could be a better learning experience, to be honest. You learn how to talk to people, how to sell to people, how to think in systems, learn how to actually prioritize, project manage. I'm like, there's like real world bloody skills, which again, not to sit here and drown in talking shit about education all the time, because I get in the habit of doing that. But like, these are skills that we're not teaching at our schools. And actually, for this, like, I think this kid, whoever it is, like, by the time he's 20, he's going to have way more experience, understanding, knowledge, ability than any of his peers, irrespective of his educational standard. Like, and in terms of like how many exams he's taken and passed, like, he's actually going to have skills that would be valuable in the world, in the marketplace.
And I think taking that leap in a low risk way, what's going to happen? Okay, he's maybe spent a bit of his pocket money on mocking up some stuff, and he gets told no by the garden center guy. In fact, the garden center guy did say to him, no, not at that price point. You're going to have to work on it. So he's learning.
But
right?
That's a yes. It's a yes, but not yet.
Well, it's a yes.
What are they?
You're way more positive than me. I'm quite negative, right? Yeah. I'd be like, that's a no, but let me, now it's on me to make that a yes.
I'm
quite competitive in that way, right? I guess you could look at it as really, you're saying yes. And this brings me back. So when I was at uni, I was on the, a member of the Entrepreneur Society, So even back then, right, I was like thinking, how am I going to start a business? And they brought this kid in who had been import. He was like the UK's biggest importer of electric scooters from, or not even electric. Back then it was gasoline. What do we call it? Petrol scooters.
Diesel, petrol. Yeah,
yeah, petrol scooters from China.
Yeah.
And he came to give us a talk about how he got there.
Can't get those. Can't get those these days.
For all manner of reasons.
Unless you want to pay 104% more, but anyway,
the rest.
Yeah.
But the question I asked him, it actually embarrassed me because I was one of like five people in the room. And I was like, man, this guy's a legend in my mind, at least. And he was similar age to us. He wasn't like some old experienced entrepreneur. And I said to him, I was like, what would you have done if you had failed? And he looked at me like I was an idiot. And he was like, mate, I couldn't have failed. He said, basically, I wanted one of those scooters. Mm. I thought, how can I get one? Mm. The MOQ, so the minimum order I needed to make was like 10 units or something. I realized that if I could sell 9 of the 10, it would make me money, so I get a free scooter.
Yeah.
He was like, yeah, maybe, you know, he wasn't smart enough to sell in advance, actually. He just got the money together and paid for it. But that is the next logical step, right?
Yeah.
You've got experience that he didn't have. Mm. So you would have sold in advance. Mm. You'd have sold 1,000 and you'd have already had an amazing business. Mm. But he was like, man, it wasn't really a risk. If it was a risk, I'd have ended up with 10 scooters. I'd have given 9 to my mates. And it would have been a costly lesson, but I'd still have the scooter I wanted. Mm. I was like, man, because back then I was like, oh, failure is bad. Going back to what you were saying, I, you know, also privately educated, and also, I mean, it was somewhat embarrassing, but at prize day, it was like, yeah, Mike, come up, and you know, it was like a not for every subject.
I've got a few Bibles that are sitting in the library at the moment.
All my prizes are long gone, right? Yeah. But yeah, so I was like an academic top performer, and I'd always been told I had great potential and all the rest of it. And then you hit the real world and you're like, flipping heck, I'm nowhere near as smart or as good as I thought I was. Even if I'm prepared to work hard, which I
was. Or potentially as hungry, right? Like, it sounds like you were hungry, but like when you realize that, you know, when you realize that so much of what you have achieved has been down to circumstances, like, it's very hard to go out into the real world. It can be very hard to go out into the real world and look around and go, shit, like, these guys have actually had to like work. Like,
for sure.
I know at university, I did zero work, right?
Like, I did less than zero.
Yeah.
They tried to kick me off the course in term one. Not a joke. I had to find a loophole to get through.
You've beaten me. But I mean, I came out with whatever it was, a 2.2, like, you know, but, and typical kind of private school ADHD type kid, I'm like, okay, how do I get through this by doing as little as possible? Mm. But then I looked around me, and I've like, now in retrospect, right, I look behind me, I'm like, Jesus Christ, if I actually put in some effort.
A modicum of effort.
Like, literally just a scintilla, right? It could have been quite good. But when I look back at like the others on the course at the time, and I just think about the amount of effort and work they put in, and more so the realization that for them, there was no, you know, they weren't going to coast into something. Mm. They didn't have the network. They didn't have the connections. They didn't have, like, if they came out with a third class degree, they weren't getting a job.
Dead in the water. Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Like, especially we were doing languages, so fuck, like, it's hard enough to get a job anyway. But I think the ability to actually leverage yourself, like, put in the effort. I describe myself as one of the laziest people on the planet, right? But I say that whilst running a podcast, a business, writing a book, and doing
I say we're quite similar. Yeah. I'm also very lazy / efficient.
Yeah.
Right?
So, it's the efficient part, right? It's the, like, I figured out how to hack my life to essentially make it as easy as possible, right? Like, if I can automate something, or if I can hire someone who can do something better because I hate doing it, like, that frees up my time to do the stuff that I do enjoy doing and that I'm good at doing, right? But I think we forget that lots of people have never had, like, they've never had to think about life in that way. Right? I think, again, this is partly down to kind of the education system, et cetera. It's always been linear, and like, you do this to get here and you do that to get there. Then you get on the career and then you spend 20 years doing the career, right? I've never thought in that way, or like, I would struggle to think in that way. In fact,
similarly,
I think I would very much like hate thinking in that way. But I think if I hadn't have failed at stuff, I don't think I would have grown. And it's only through like 15 years of failing and growing, and those failures could have been minor, major, whatever, right? But it's only through failing, growing, learning that I then ended up being able to actually take a bet on myself and realize, okay, actually I can do some stuff that is interesting. I'm not entirely sure what my point was here, but I think it was around this 13-year-old, right? Because I love that. Like this kid is going out doing, you know, doing something that, like, I don't know that many. I mean, like, yes, of course, 13-year-old have a lemonade stand or they'll try and sell some stuff at school, whatever, right? But like actually thinking about it as a business, like not just I want to create this thing, but actually I want to create, sell, and organize myself in a way that I can create some recurring, you know, repeatable revenue.
Man, we're drilling down into unit economics with him. We're drilling down into distribution strategy, business model.
Yeah.
Does he sell direct to consumer? Does he go through a distributor?
We can offer you financial models at a discount. let's not get it. We'll probably get canceled on our WhatsApp chat as well. Look, we've gone through a bunch of stuff, but I do want to get to this last point because I think this is this is interesting, if a little bit controversial, right? So Underdog has obviously been like a fascinating response to all of this, whether it's, you know, VC changing, whether it is, you know, your time in accelerators and your experience of that, whether it is, you know, now having these tools that can basically, you know, launch an MVP in 20 minutes. I'm like, honestly, although... I
mean, you've done it yourself, right?
I've tried. I mean, like at the moment I'm struggling with Gemini, trying to write Google Apps scripts, which anyway, we'll talk about that offline. But I'd love to understand what problem you thought you were solving when you started it and how that's evolved. And then one of the things that you said to me is that you are anti-diversity, which we both know might get either of us canceled. But can you explain what you actually mean by that in the Underdog context? And how do you think about, I guess, impact, right? Like, are you thinking about Underdog in terms of like, how do we create outlier returns? Are you thinking about it, okay, how do we just create as many great businesses as possible? What is the plan?
Okay, my simple brain can't cope with all of that, so I'll get you to prompt me.
That's fine. So how did it evolve? Like, let's start with that.
Let's first start with the diversity piece, because before we do get cancelled...
Okay. Yeah, let's address that.
Let's address that, right?
That's good. That's a good idea.
So, I'm not anti-diversity, but I'm anti how diversity is being portrayed. And what I mean by that is, and you'll have seen it, so I'm not against this per se, as in an accelerator just for black founders, or an accelerator just for female founders, or support just for state school educated, non-privately educated founders. I'm not against that in principle. And I think if that is the only way that you can encourage people from those overlooked, underrepresented demographics to take the first step, kudos, do it, right? Fantastic. I think the danger there, though, is that you are saying to those individuals,
This is the only way. Yeah.
So the approach that we take at Underdog, we've got Underdog in the name. So it's somewhat explicit that we exist for Underdog founders, for people from any of these overlooked backgrounds. But positively discriminate. We don't say just because, we only serve one-legged purple unicorns who are based in the north of England. Mm. We don't do that. Mm. We say, actually, like, I might have to swear. Is that allowed?
Yeah, swear
like,
into that.
Fuck the excuses.
Yeah.
Like, you have the ability to do it regardless of your circumstance. Yep. So the polar opposite to what other people are telling you. Mm. Other people are saying, well, you probably won't make it, but to help you make it, we've created this special little place for you. No, there's no special place for you. You're going to have to work fucking hard. Mm. You're going to have to work your butt off. And yes, you will have to work harder than others, but get rid of these mental barriers, these artificial hurdles that you have been conditioned to accept are in your way. Let's just remove those for you. So rather than saying, oh, because, I don't know, look, I tick a fair few demographic boxes myself, right? I'm a gay founder slash investor. Even though I don't see myself as disabled, technically I'm disabled, you know, per the Equalities Act. I'm a second generation immigrant. So, I'm the brother of an immigrant, the son of an immigrant, the grandson of an immigrant.
Wait, where does bank come from?
From a phone book, I think, when my granddad emigrated here originally.
From?
I don't know where. In fact, no, he didn't emigrate here. He was born here, but my grandmother did. So I think my great grandfather emigrated. Actually, don't know, mate. Eastern Europe, I would guess.
Okay, fine. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Okay.
He died. Yeah,
back so in the midst of time, sort of thing.
Yeah, my dad had me late, so he's already passed away. My granddad had my dad late, so he's already passed away. So a lot of the family lore has been lost. Some of the stories still stick in here, but yeah, exactly where they're from, I don't know. My grandmother was from somewhere in Ukraine. I know that.
Got it. Okay.
But yeah, look, do I see myself as disadvantaged because of those things? No. Mm. And again, like, if you were to look at me, you wouldn't necessarily know that any of those things were true, right? I don't present as disabled. Maybe I don't present as gay or LGBT or homosexual or whatever you want to call me. I am white. I am male, right? So I'm not saying that my experience of the world is the same as, say, your experience as a non-white person. Mm. Maybe we've had different experiences. But would you see yourself as disadvantaged?
I've talked about this a lot. No, not at all. I've been one of the most privileged people on the planet. Like, the only disadvantages that I have had have been self-inflicted.
Oh, ditto, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's okay. It's okay. So I think a big part of why we created Underdog is to say we are for everyone. There is no application form. We're not going to say to 98% of you, you didn't make the cut. Mm. We want to be as inclusive as possible. And without
being
blind to it.
Without being specifically focused on, so if you had a cohort, if you had a, like, let's say you had 1,000 applicants and 998 of them were white male, you're not going to say no to those 998.
No, I right? wouldn't. But yeah. What is interesting, and this is why and it's still very early days for us, right? I'm not claiming to be the king of diversity or to have solved every single problem in the world, right? Mm-hmm. I'll leave that to others to claim. But what
at least Twitter at the very...
Well, at least, yeah. X, as it's called these days, of course.
I refuse, but yeah, okay.
Yeah, let's call it Twitter. But if you actually look at the data from our past cohorts, because I get... No, not like, yeah, actually, like, legit attacked, not physically, right, but online for some of the stuff that I say and our positioning. And I get taught, I did a post the other day, like a really congratulatory post supporting some of, one of our founding teams, a company I've invested in, I've put my own cash in, who are building an LGBTQIA+. Got them all
did
right.
Not, did got not, them all right. I'd forgotten about the QIA, but okay, fine.
Yeah, and does change.
Yeah.
Mental health app.
Okay.
And they are an incredible team. They're doing great things. And they had a tiny SEIS allocation left that was expiring because they'd set the company up over just under three years ago.
Yeah.
So I did a post saying, look, they're doing great. All these venture funds are backing them. But there is this little ticket. If this resonates with you and with your life mission, get in touch with me and I'll put you in touch with the founders. And I said, what's great about them is that so few LGBT+ founders get funded that only the best of the best do get funded.
Yeah.
And someone attacked me for that. And they were like, oh, that's like telling other founders they'll never make it and la, 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 la.
No, it's
and,
just reality. Yeah,
and, well, this is the point. And then the arguments this individual was making, I was like, yeah, you're saying exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah, but it's because people make these bad faith arguments. Like, the way I describe it is, and I've seen this happen before, right? So I know I know people that invest solely in female founders. And then I've seen people attack them for not having invested in them despite them being female. I'm like... It's a sub 20 million fund. Like,
you can't invest in
everything. And venture, by the way, is a power law game. And therefore, like, if you don't pass their criteria to invest, it's not because they say they invest in women, but they don't. They cannot invest in every woman that comes across, just in the same way you can't invest in every business that comes across your plate. It's just impossible, right? It's not
feasible. Let me bring it back to what we have seen.
Yeah.
And why I think our way could be as good, if not a better way than some of the other other methodologies. So yeah, I get attacked and I get told, I often get asked and challenged, well, how many female founders do you actually get? I'm like, yeah, about 50-50 actually. In fact,
that's really interesting. Female. That's super interesting.
And that is down, I believe, to our positioning that we are inclusive. We're not, look, obviously some of the female founder accelerators are going to get 100% female founders, right? Yeah, for sure. But given the fact that we say we're open to anyone, the fact that we do get about 50-50 tells me that there are barriers put in place. That, I mean, I'm not saying the barriers don't exist, but that in the traditional venture ecosystem, barriers do exist.
Well.
So we should remove the barriers.
Yeah.
rather than creating these, in my opinion, these special little places for these founders.
I mean, what you're saying resonates hugely with me. I mean, I've said this. We've had a number of kind of female founder sort of community founders on the podcast, and I understand why those exist. But part of me is like, also, why should they need to exist, right? Mm. And you know, maybe there is a reason that they need to exist. That's fine, right? Like, I'm not saying they shouldn't exist, but I think the problem is that we see it all the time online, right? We all get stuck in our echo chambers, and actually, if we just accept that, okay, there is going to be differences of some nature, right? We are different, right? To your earlier point, we're very similar. But objectively, we're different. Like I'm a brown guy, you're a white guy, right? Like that's the reality, right? But we can have a conversation, right? I can have a conversation with a woman. I can have a conversation with, you know, someone from Southeast Asia or from the US or whatever, right? Like, for sure. Pretty much the only people I can't have conversations with, I've realized, and that's just me, sadly, is people that are very, very politically biased in either direction. Mm-hmm. Like, I just find that annoying, if nothing else, right?
I would take it one step further. For me, it's dogmatic people.
Yeah.
People who just believe what they want to believe and exclude everything else.
Yeah.
I like open-minded people.
Exactly.
Who are interesting and also interested. That's who I'm interested in speaking
to. It feels like we went to the same school. I'm not entirely sure how
we didn't. I know that.
Exactly. But okay, so I get the kind of anti-diversity point, right? But how did you get to here, though? Like, because, you know, again, your background does not scream like I'm going to set up an accelerator. Like you know, IB, you did some angel investing, bit of venture, you know, kind of went through a couple of accelerators, but you did a whole ton of mentoring, which I think is probably how it progressed, right?
Like, that's how it progressed. Right. I mean, look, I think it was Steve Jobs who said that we as humans are exceptionally good at connecting the dots backwards.
Right.
I.e., these random events happen in our lives, and then we tell ourselves a story and other people a story as to how we got here.
Exactly.
I was always planning to, you know, no, Arish, I wasn't, right? Yeah, yeah. This just evolved almost by chance.
Yeah.
But
emergent strategy, we would call that, yeah.
Okay, I like it. Yeah, I didn't go to business school, although I lecture at business schools, ironically. But I always say to them, I've just got a bachelor's.
Yeah.
And not linguistics or languages for me, but philosophy. So
I love it. You should be going into AI, but anyway. Yeah.
Well, chief philosophy officer. Yeah, I think that's going to be the next big 100%. Board level position. But how I got here is, I took the leap. Yeah, I randomly read this Tim Ferriss guy's podcast, blog, as he had back then. Bought his book, read it. Then he started on his blog talking about the real world MBA. I took the leap, started doing that, and very quickly met a couple of guys who were running what you would probably now call a corporate venture fund, maybe, or a startup venture fund. They had their own really cash flow generating business. Mm. They were builders and they wanted to help other people follow the same path as them. And they'd raised some external capital into the fund as well. They said to me, we're not, you know, one was more sales, customer facing. The other one was more technical and they were missing that financial hat. They brought me on board. We started investing. I was co-investing with my own cash and helping them. But what they realized is that they were builders at heart, but they wanted a portfolio approach. Mm. So they set up, before they were cool, what I guess you would call an ideation or venture studio.
Sounds like Blenheim Chalcott sort of style.
Yeah, it wasn't them. Yeah. But yeah, look, they basically paid some people to sit
It's actually like a it's like a Berkshire Hathaway, essentially. Like, how do you build a portfolio of assets?
Yeah, and from a startup perspective, though. But basically, long story short, they were paying some people to work with them on ideas, demand validate them, see if any took off. And then I came to help them with that as well. One of the ideas really did take off, and we got external venture funding. So that was my first VC-backed business with those two guys. And as I said, they were very experienced, helped me learn a lot. That company failed, by the way. So again, failing forwards. Mm. That was the important thing.
Mm.
I didn't go, oh, that failed, let's give up. I was like, that failed. What have I learned?
Why did it? What went wrong? What can I
What would I do differently next time? Yeah. And what opportunities can I take from this? And one of the great opportunities was that our investors said, please don't give us the money back because we said, we can tell it's not going to work. We won't be able to fundraise. We're going to run out of cash. Just take the money back that's left over. And they said, we don't want it back because it was under SEIS and going to get tax penalties.
Yeah.
So they said, look, just keep trying. So what we did is we tried to pivot, and that led to other opportunities. But we also did something similar to what we were talking about before the pod, actually. We took what was a cost center, i.e. our office space, and we turned it into a profit center. So we took a lease, which I happened to cross my desk for another company I'd invested in. They were moving offices. They said, oh, do you know anyone who wants an office? I said, I'll take it. We'll take it for our company, and then we will turn it into a co-working space.
Yeah, yeah.
So then that brought loads of other ecosystem operators through our office, literally. And that led to other opportunities. And then eventually I went on to Antler to build again. And they didn't invest in solo founders. And the experience was great in many respects.
Which, by the way, like, I'm a firm believer you can be a solo founder. Like,
I prefer solo founders.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, yeah.
I'm not saying you build your business on your own.
No.
But Jeff Bezos, solo founder of Amazon, is he single-handedly built Amazon? No, of course not, but he's the sole founder.
Yeah, yeah.
Then you bring the right people in at the right stage.
Exactly.
One of the greatest reasons for any startup's failure is co-founder conflict.
100%, yeah.
Right? Yeah. And yet VCs want to invest in co-founders because they think it de-risks it.
I would argue that lots of VCs specifically, probably less so. Like, I don't think it's as big of a problem. I think it always comes down to, and you talked about it earlier, right? Like, your network relationship. So if you are a solo founder and you have access to, great. If you're a solo founder and you aren't, like, let's say you're a solo founder, but you're not technical, and you can't get your hands on someone technical, then that's a problem, right? Like, where you maybe need a co-founder. I would argue, like, as a very much generalist founder and non-technical, like, if I were to build a tech business again, which I don't think I would actually at this point, I would want to find someone who is similar to me, does not need a job as such, who just wants to build some cool stuff and play 100%. Around and figure it out. But this comes back to, like, who can risk that, who can do that, right? And build something interesting with them. That's the kind of co-founder. But if I purposefully went out and said, I'm going to build a business, I think I would do it very similarly to how I think about that today, which is, like, bootstrap as far as I can. try and kind of sell before I build.
Definitely.
And then, okay, at that point, all right, figure it out. Do I need someone technical? And in which case, hire them rather than, you know, give up 70% of my equity or whatever, right?
Yeah, for sure. And look, what you first said there, which is around that melting pot of ideas and being around smart people, that, for me, is the most incredible thing about venture.
Yeah.
And that is one thing that Antler did incredibly well. They had, okay, they say 100, it wasn't quite 100, but let's say 100 people in the room that they'd selected from thousands of applicants to be there. Mm. And that was really cool and got me buzzed. I didn't really learn anything technically, like some stuff actually, you know, in terms of, like, business building and all the rest of it. But I've been doing it for long enough from both sides of the table as a investor myself and also as a founder myself.
Mm.
So I didn't really, like, learn much in an academic sense, but I met some awesome people. And that was great. And I thought, you know, I felt really privileged. Yes, you know, I made it through. I was one of the 1% of people who made it through. Great, right? Clap on the back. Fantastic. But after leaving there, then I founded another startup, basically, which we'll fast track through. But yeah, you know, has raised millions of dollars in investment. Great. Fantastic. On paper, I'm worth a lot of money. But in reality, we'll see if that ever materializes.
Wait 20 years and then we'll talk about it again. Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, that was also another experience and a lot of learnings. And again, I failed forwards. I didn't say, right, I failed at that. Let me try something completely different. I thought, how can I apply these lessons to whatever I do next? And just fortuitously, I got invited to mentor on this, I guess, venture program, I suppose, but working with very early, as in, like, day zero founders, people who wanted to start something, but in many cases didn't know what they wanted to start.
Mm.
And I learned two major things on that. One was that I'm really bad at picking who is going to succeed at day zero. Because people who on paper look like they should outperform, you know, sometimes they did, but often didn't. And people who I wrote off because they, you know, their CV, for want of a better word, wasn't great, actually sometimes did outperform. So I was like, okay, right, that's interesting. It probably correlates with my angel investments as well, right? Mm. I haven't been great at picking the individuals who are going to outperform. But having worked with them for 3 months, I start to get an idea of who is going to be good because I've worked with them. And I was like, oh, that's what Antler was doing with us, right?
Mm.
Back then they were paying, I think now they don't pay you, but back then they were paying us to basically sit around so they could monitor us and figure out whether or not we were going to succeed.
Yeah.
And they were capturing all these data points. Because I remember this crazy guy, Wouter, who I met there, he's a good friend of mine now, but he was like the most gregarious, outgoing guy ever. If there was ever an opportunity to get up on stage and pitch, he'd be there. The polar opposite to me, because I'm introverted and naturally like want to sit in the corner.
You honestly don't feel introverted, but okay, cool.
Well, because I've taught myself to exhibit the traits of an extrovert.
Interesting.
But yeah, at IBM, that was my first proper job. I went to, basically, my manager was had loads of training budget and he ran the team of salespeople. I was the technical support.
Okay.
And he was like, look, I'm monitored on how much of this training budget I deploy because, you know, training and it's CPD important. And stuff is important. He said, but none of these guys want to take it because they're too busy selling. I said, mate, I'll take all of it. I will take all of your training.
That's like the biggest hack. Like, go into a team that no one wants to train and just use the entire budget. Love
it. It was unreal. So and I said, okay, I want to do some technical stuff, which will help with the job. Yeah. And I want to do some sales stuff because I think I want to learn what you guys do. And I went to sales school and you had to do this, I don't know, you know, one of these surveys that tells you your personality type. Mm. I take it with a pinch of salt. Mm. But it was me and this other techie guy that had been sent there by his boss because he was like, you're too introverted, on the introvert side of the room. And all the cool people were on the other side of the room. And I was like, man, I don't want to be like this guy. I want to be like them.
Mm.
And I went to the sales trainer. I said, mate, how can I be more like them? And he went, you just start exhibiting those traits. You fake it till you make it, basically.
Mm.
He goes, and again, this maybe goes back to your personal circumstances. Maybe I was born as an introvert or brought up as an introvert. I don't know. But I took the decision to change who I was and how I exhibited myself.
Mm.
Even though fundamentally, I would rather be in the corner.
Yeah.
But a long story short, I said to Wouter, man, I'm really surprised that you got on the program. No offense, right? Because they made us do all these psychometric tests and stuff and, you know, multiple choice questions. And he looked at me and he went, oh, mate, I just put A for all of them. And I was like, whoa. So actually, they weren't using that to choose.
Yeah.
They were using that to monitor. So if you outperformed, maybe they would then say, actually, someone who just doesn't care is okay, right? We want that risk-taking mentality. Mm. So I thought, okay, they are monitoring and maybe they'll make good bet. They didn't invest in me, right? So I'd say they made a bad bet, although it was a good bet in my case, based on what I was working on at least. But they didn't invest in solo founders. I thought that's probably not a great thesis. But what I did like is that they were tracking us and they were monitoring us. And I thought, oh, that's basically what I'm doing here. I'm getting early insights into who could outperform and starting to develop a playbook to, one, how I can help them, and two, how I can identify the high potential individuals.
Yeah.
So I was like, right, that's in here now. Okay, that's good. But what Antler did wrong is they had, I think now they get 10,000 applicants for every 100 spaces, like 9,900, they never get to track. So I was like, how can you scale Antler, but in a way that is actually accessible for the individuals as well?
Mm.
So how can we get not 10,000, but 1 million applicants?
Mm.
And how can we service them? And actually, I mean, the end result is going to be similar. You'll be left with maybe 100, but how you get there might mean that the makeup of those 100 is fundamentally different.
Yep.
And that's why I come back to, I mean, look, diversity, specific programs, great, man, knock yourself out. If that's what you believe will move the needle, I'm not gonna shit on you. Good for you, because you are doing something to make a difference.
Mm.
It's just that my way of doing it is fundamentally
open the funnel up.
Open the funnel as wide as you freaking can.
Which is actually the right way. Like that, and that is the actual reality. Like if you open the funnel up and you give people the opportunity, then it's all then down to merit, whatever that merit might look like. Whereas if you close the funnel, then you're only gonna see a certain portion, right?
And look, it's a privilege for us that we get to work with people from all around the globe. We're not constricted to a physical space in London that can only fit 100 people, right? We are virtual first. We do local events in different cities, but that's how it scales, right? So you still get some element of in-person, of being a part of something physical, and that, you know, like this is the first time we've met, right? Although I feel like I've known you forever. And it is different and it's great. 100%. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
But you still keep it open and accessible, and it allows you to scale. I mean, we've never had 10,000 people on the cohort, right? And maybe we will reach some sort of natural limit, although I hope we won't, because we'll just break them up into smaller cohorts. Yeah.
You'll just hire more people, run different cohorts.
And make it work.
You may end up, like at the moment, you know, it's a lot about getting to revenue first. That may be a core kind of principle, but you may end up with different cohorts in different programs, right? Because
how do I
improve my marketing, right? How do I improve my distribution? How do I improve my product? How do I improve whatever, right? Like there Definitely. Are, because this is one of the, I mean, one of my bugbears, and I want to wrap up in a second as well, because it feels like we could probably talk for another like 2 hours.
We could talk for two
like
two
it
years,
like
yeah.
could be very, very easy. But like one of the problems fundamentally that I've always had with accelerator programs in general is accelerator programs are built to be almost homogenous, right? Like everyone has that same experience. But the problem is, yeah. A, no two businesses are the same. Yeah. B, no two founders are the same. C, where do I go? A, B, two? One, two, three. Teams within startups face different challenges all the time, right? And like the challenge you're facing today is not the same challenge you need to fix tomorrow either, right? Exactly. And so, you know, this is one of the things that I think accelerators kind of I personally think most accelerators, really the value is the value of the network, right? Like, is it a fertile ground from which you can either recruit, raise money, or find expertise? Like that's, you know, where I see the value. But so for those that are looking to kind of join Underdog, do they just go to Underdog and
underdogx.co, and our next cohort will be launching soon. Yeah. But we're a startup ourselves, right?
Yeah.
Our fundamental mission is to remain as open and as low friction as possible to as many people as possible. Mm. We're learning with every cohort that we run, and we always ask for feedback on a rolling basis. So it's not just, you know, to be frank, our success rate is probably 3%. Mm. Like
success measured by
they make it all the way through the program, and ideally they are generating revenue, which is not for the sake of it, right? That is just to prove that they have demand validated, i.e. they're providing something to a specific audience that audience understands, wants, and is prepared to pay for.
Yeah,
because again, if you go back to that startup triangle of success, the money needs to be in there somewhere, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't mean they're profitable or they're retiring.
No,
but
they've validated the fact that someone wants to buy what they're selling.
That's it. And
kind again, of it's important.
Not, it's not revenue for revenue's sake, right? There's plenty of ways of making money. You don't need to start a business to do that. Mm. So it is demand validation is really what we're focused on.
Yeah.
But you're right. Founders are different. Businesses are different. And it's a struggle for us on a continuous basis to figure out how we can best service as many people as possible. And actually what we've realized is less is more. Mm. We're prescriptive to a certain degree in that you've got to follow the rules and you've got to be a good actor, basically. We've got a no dickheads policy. And we regularly kick people out who we think are toxic.
That's so awesome. So I love that.
Fine. And we're brutal. But what we also say is you must have an action-taking mentality.
Yeah.
And not just a mentality, you've got to take the action.
Execution oriented.
Execution is king. Yeah. And we say to them, if you are here because you think this is like a mini MBA or like an online course that you can like sit back and watch and chill out and just listen to me speak, mate, like I'll lose my voice.
Yeah.
Like there's no point.
I don't know. After this afternoon, I'm not entirely sure that's going to be true. But listen, look, I got one last question as we wrap up, right? So this is something I'll ask all our guests. What is one thing that you have a contrarian opinion or conviction about from any area of life, whether that's work, politics, socially, or at home? What is a kind of hill that you would die on defending that no one else would?
Oh, man.
That's your ambo.
Yeah. Man, I think you prepped me for this question and I was like, man, I really don't know what to say. I feel like we've covered a lot of contrarian stuff already on this podcast.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is contrarian, right? But I think it is both okay to fail.
Yeah.
Which culturally is not that accepted in the UK.
Yeah.
If I compare to the US where my brother lives and where I spend a lot of time, there failure is, if not celebrated, at least accepted.
Yeah, 100%.
Here it's not accepted, so that's one thing. The second thing is that I think success should be celebrated as well, right?
Yeah.
And I remember reading many moons ago in like Maxim or one of those dodgy magazines, you know, a quote.
You're showing your age here, mate.
I'm definitely showing my age. I've got the gray hairs, bro. I've had a more stressful life than you, I think. You're holding it well. But it was, I think it was a founder, like an entrepreneur or a business owner probably is what they called themselves back then, that said, In the US, I drive down the road in my chauffeur-driven limousine and people stop and clap. In the UK, I get driven around in my car and people throw rocks at me.
Yeah.
So I think here, pulling people down, dragging them down so that we all feel equal, that is wrong. We should be trying to pull ourselves up their level.
We're back to Gary again. Yeah, but I mean, like, I talk about this all the time, right? Like, we seem to have this mentality that let's make everyone even by bringing the top down to the bottom rather than let's make everyone as even as possible by pulling the people from the bottom up.
And I'll say one more controversial thing then. I think inequality is okay. I think there is a base level, man. A base level, of course. And if you think about, I don't know, again, probably showing my age and it's probably fallen out of favor, but Maslow's hierarchy of needs, right? Yeah, you should have food and shelter. I think there's like a base level that I would hope the entire world would get to.
Ultimately.
Clearly it's not, right?
Yeah.
Clearly we're not there.
Could be, but yeah.
Yeah, we could be, but we're not. So I think, look, that is a fundamental like lower barrier that I think we should pull people up to, for sure. And that I am in favor of reallocating wealth from the top to support. But I think some degree of inequality, because frankly, and this is one of the first things that we do on Underdog with all of our founders, we say to them, why the heck do you want to start a business? Like, tell us why. And we've got motivating factors ranging from, I want to make a ton of money, to I want to change the world for the better, to I want to work with cool people, blah, blah, blah. You know, we've got like a whole list of these. And they order them from most to least important to them at that point in time, because it does change. And everyone's is different. Everyone's is different, right?
Of course.
There are so many permutations. So not everyone wants the same things, right? Do I want to be a multi-billionaire with a private jet? Probably not.
Yeah. I mean, like, I again, I've talked about it often on this podcast. Like, I have no desire nor the right mentality to try and build a billion-dollar business, because I enjoy my time with my family and with myself way too much to necessarily be able to dedicate, you know, the sort of time. Plus, I'm just not that driven and focused.
We are more alike than we are different.
Yeah,
and the
outcome that I look for is, you know, a million quid would be life changing, even a million. But like two or three or four, you know, I'm 47. Like, I don't need a billion quid to be happy. And in fact, you know, my wife would disagree with me here. Like, I'd be happy with, you know, a bit of a bigger place, a place somewhere else, maybe in Italy or whatever. And, you know, that's it. Like, my needs are quite simple. Sadly, my wife's needs are maybe less simple, but we'll see. I'm going to make the money first. Listen, Mike, it's been absolutely incredible having you on the podcast today. Thank you so much. This has been a really wide ranging conversation for our audience. Where can they find you online? Are you on LinkedIn, Twitter? Where's the best place to find you on the interweb?
LinkedIn is the best place. Yeah, Mike Bank.
With a rainbow.
Rainbow flag. Yeah. Or rainbow in my name. So that's how you know it's me. And underdogx.co. That will give you information about us and you'll be able to get in touch.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. It's been an absolute blast.
My pleasure. We've gone around the houses.
Amazing. For sure. Yeah, for sure.